Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ford. Ford invites us tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 72. It's recorded on Tuesday, August 14th, and we are your source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I am Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards, back in the studio.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm nice. Back. I've returned.
Feels good to have everybody in the studio.
It does,
just a little bit of extra energy here when that happens. We are not joined today by Eileen. Unfortunately, she decided to start her vacation early at the airport. Why aren't you Skyping in from the airport on your way to your vacation,
I question
Eileen?
The dedication. I really
yeah,
do.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
She's going to hear this. She's going to be like, wait a minute.
You guys told me
not to do that.
No, we gave her a pass. She's on a much deserved vacation. I'm very jealous that she is going to go get some time off. So,
as far as I'm concerned, when you're on your way to your vacation and you're at the airport, you're on your vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, don't do that. Don't Skype in from there.
Especially when the Wi-Fi expires every 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's another trick. So we have joining us today, Father Robert Balasair. You are no stranger to the TWiT network these days. You're all over the place with This Week in Enterprise Tech. And
I am. I'm kind of glomming on to TWiT. I mean, come on. This is an uber geek nirvana. Who wouldn't want to be here? Are you kidding me?
One of us.
One of us.
By the way, for the purpose of the show, I believe chat room says I'm going to be called not Eileen, so I'm Father Not Eileen.
All right. Okay. That'll be hard for me to remember.
That's much easier for me. So what is Father Not Eileen thing?
Well, I will attempt to try and follow those rules, but I have a feeling I'm going to fail miserably.
He's already showed us up with the tablet stand. I'm very impressed.
That's one thing about Father Robert. If you haven't seen him on other shows, he's got all sorts of gadgets and tricks up his sleeve. I'm sure we're going to hear all about them today.
Very cool.
This week, we're going to be discussing, among other things, Motorola's plans to, you know, kind of get fit and slim down a little bit. The death of Flash on Android, actually, is nigh. And side effects of DRM. Plus, we have three free apps in our arena segment towards the end of the episode. But that's all, you know, later. Right now, we got to get into some news. Let's do that.
Do it. Let's do it.
Okay, so fine. Let's check in on the patent case of century. You know, Samsung versus Apple. I'll admit it. I'm just kind of exhausted trying to follow this.
I can tell. Earlier, you're like, you know, we've got some more legal stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? I don't know. Like I realize the importance of this trial and everything, but following it on a daily basis and trying to like summarize that on a weekly basis, it's so difficult. There's so much stuff coming out of this, and it's all kind of minutia.
It's legal exhaustion. I think everyone has taken their position. You've got the Apple fanboys on this side. You've got the Android fanboys on that side. Then you've got the geeks who are just saying, when will it be over?
Yeah. Right. And just tell me what the outcome is.
And if you've had any experience in following any legal proceedings, whether it's technology-based or any sort of thing, legal equals slow and meticulous and detailed, and there's some briefs and all these things like that. And it's hard to get momentum in that coverage until you start getting, you know, rulings and you start getting some real reactions. Okay, now what does this mean?
Totally. Yeah. Well, I'll do my best to at least give you a few points that I thought were interesting. Judge Lucy Koh ruled that the International Galaxy S, the Galaxy S2, and the Galaxy Ace are no longer part of the trial. And later, Samsung tried to get the case tossed out, claiming that Apple wasn't doing a very good job presenting their case. Not surprisingly, Judge Lucy Koh denied that request. I think she actually kind of berated both sides at that point, just kind of saying, look, you guys need to get this together. And if you are keeping score, that still leaves 17 Samsung devices as part of the case. So three of those out really doesn't change a whole lot as far as that's concerned.
Progress, though. Whittling it down.
Sure. Yeah, whittling it down, making it easier to understand.
But this is like the old school of business negotiation where you ask for something so outlandish,
sure,
and then you whittle it down. But, I mean, you're not supposed to do that in a legal case. You're supposed to present the best possible case you have, not say, well, we're going to ask for 20 phones. We really only think three infringe.
But is it, though, in a legal case? Because it's the kind of thing where it's like, listen, we want to get as much as we can, so we're going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at this judge. And if they walked in going three, they might get two of them thrown out or one of them thrown out. It might just boil down to one. So go with, you know, go with – I mean, the legal minds that at corporations are part of the – whether it's for the betterment or the worst of the experience, they will work every loophole and every angle. And so I'm not surprised at all that they're doing this. You know, and I would expect shenanigans like this on both sides.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's not a technology thing, but look at the Progressive case that blew up yesterday with that guy. You know, like the legal shenanigans that went on there with that insurance company was crazy. And these are big law firms that figure out how to work the system. And so, you know, Apple and Samsung, they're both going to be guilty of it. So.
Well, the thing is, I mean, with so many parts of the case shedding as we go along, there's so much ground for an appeal.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's the other reason why, even though I'm very passionate about how this shows how our patent system is messed up, I can't get excited about this because I know even when we do get a decision, that's the start of the process.
Yeah, totally. Totally. You spent the last month leading up to the beginning of the process.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of depressing right there. I've kind of appreciated today how you're not the only person I've heard have the word shenanigans around this case. I like that shenanigans is kind of seeing a resurgence right now.
It's a handy word. Yeah, well, it really sums
certainly
up.
Certainly works.
Yeah, it sums up some legal shenanigans.
Get a broom.
Now, Apple has wrapped up the defense of their claims, and starting today, Samsung began their own lengthy, as we can imagine, presentation of their counterclaims. They've tried to call Apple's patents into doubt by showcasing what they believe to be prior art in both Pocket PC's launch tile and Diamond Touch, which is a multi-touch tablecloth. I put that in quotes because it's not really a tablecloth, but it kind of gets you to open your eyes a little bit calling it that, that exhibited bounce back images back in 2003, which is something that Apple's saying, you know, Samsung is kind of in the wrong for having any sort of bounce back. So I don't think these things were necessarily Samsung's, but they exhibit that kind of behavior and hopefully bolster their side.
Again, throwing everything but the kitchen sink. They're going to look at everything that was out there that has been like, and they're going to say, well, if Apple's suing us, why didn't they sue them? And, you know, that sort of thing.
So. Well, I mean, they tried to throw in the clip from 2000, the Space Odyssey of, you know, him using what looks like a tablet.
Yes.
And that's kind of it's all that prior art. And so I feel for Lucy Koh because there's all these elements coming in that she must be going, are you people serious? Are you do you know what you're doing? Why is this making it to my bench?
Right.
Absolutely. Well, she is kind of hitting her point as well. She's actually said that she wants the trial to conclude with the closing arguments starting next Tuesday. So if that happens on next episode, when we talk about this, we can talk about that part and maybe not talk about
it. Hopefully. I mean, honestly, Chad might need to get his trigger figure ready because that might be some breaking news when that happens.
You'll have to remember that for next week.
Well, not now. Say the words breaking news and you need to be prepared for it to happen at any moment. So, Chad, that was a good practice.
I like that you were so quick with that, Chad. Thank you for being awesome, as always.
That's premature bumperous.
Premature breaking news. Oh, that's excellent. Well, what is the one thing that is as dramatic and exciting as a legal case for us to talk about?
Numbers. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Those are fantastic.
So some excitement from the Gartner Group today as they released their report on mobile sales in Q2 2012. And honestly, things are looking pretty good for Android. It's got 64% of the market, followed by iOS with a distant 18% market share. One of the big reasons for this is Samsung, which just, you know, has been a powerhouse this year, rolling out phones and the big Samsung S3 launch, you know, leading into that. Although Q2, I wonder how much the S3 sales probably didn't really affect because it came out later in Q2. But who knows? But either way, Samsung's a big reason why. If you look at the vendor list that Gartner released, 27% of the market share is to Samsung, and it surpassed Nokia, who had 20%, and iOS with 7%. So Android's living pretty large when you look at the marketplace. I mean, you know, again, lots of manufacturers, lots of openness, lots of product out there. People are buying it. It's really gaining traction.
Yeah. So. Well, what I like about this is it's simplifying an argument that people have always had with iOS versus Android, and that is, oh, well, there's only three iOS phones, but, you know, there's 1,000 Android phones. Yep. Well, we've got one manufacturer right now who is kicking the snot out of Apple in terms of sales. Not only that, you can really narrow it down to maybe three or four of their models that comprise most of their sales. So we're really starting to get to an apples-to-apples comparison. Yeah, if you put these products next to each other, the average person is more likely to take the Android phone.
Right. Apples to apples, pun intended, right?
Yes.
Of course. But, I mean, and it's interesting, too, because it's so, I mean, especially, and we always have to, you know, we navigate very closely to the Android versus Apple, the iOS versus everyone else, the Apple fanboys, kind of, you know, that kind of fight, that kind of, you know, pick a side.
Yeah, but it's difficult to avoid that.
It's very difficult to avoid that. But it's really interesting because we, you know, we live, you know, like every day, we're existing in this very technology filled kind of field. You know, I'm lucky to live in San Francisco and have a lot of friends who work in technology, and it's iOS, 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 and you get a false sense of what the rest of the world looks like.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and it's funny because I go, you know, I just was in last week when I was on the show, I was in New York, and I was in New York City and Long Island and seeing family and friends, and saw a lot more Android phones than iPhones back out there.
Absolutely.
You know, because those devices are more affordable, you know, like it's less, for whatever reason, why the average person would select a non-Apple device.
There's just a lot more of them, you know, on the shelves.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, iOS and iPhone and all that might be the one that you've heard about a lot, but when they go into a store and they see a store that's filled to the brim with all of these Android devices, and then over there's the iPhone corner where they know that the devices are going to be probably more expensive and whatever. Yeah, it's the same for me. I mean, I just got back from Boise for the weekend visiting family and saw a lot of Android phones. I do when I go traveling. I see a lot of Android
phones. A lot
of
Galaxy Notes.
Surprisingly. Now, you know, actually, one of the things that surprised me was I on the way to work, I walk to work in D.C. every day, and I pass a Sprint store, a Verizon store, an AT&T store, and a T-Mobile store. And it always used to be, well, we've got the iPhone, you know, they have it up front. They're changing their displays. The iPhones are still there, but the ones that are getting prominence are like the Galaxy S3 and the Galaxy Note. And I mean, they wouldn't do that unless they're selling those phones,
right? Mm-hmm. And I think it also speaks to the maturity of the Android product. Is that finally, you know, after being an early adopter, getting the G1 on the first day I could, and like saying, okay, I sense this is going to be something cool. What was that? 3 years ago now. Now it's at the point now where, you know, my sister has an Android phone, and you know, my sister who, you know, listens to Barry Manilow and isn't really technical.
Yeah, exactly. Barry Manilow fans.
Exactly. She has an Android phone and is, you know, we were, you know, she's out and about using apps left and right, showing me, oh, you should review this app on your show. And like, that says something about the platform and the software that the developers are creating and the devices the phones are making. And so I think these kind of reports, you know, say what you will about numbers and say what you will about market, you know, industry analysts and things like that. It's a refreshing breath of, okay, this is what the rest of the world looks like. And let's get, you know, this is a wake up call. Let's get out of our little bubble and realize that actually there's some momentum here with this product line.
Yeah. So,
hey, Ron, you know, Samsung's feeling the Android love, but you know who's not feeling that Android love?
Who?
Motorola.
Yeah.
So Motorola's been unprofitable 14 out of their last 16 quarters. Yeah, they're cutting 4,000 jobs, with about 1,300 of those happening in the United States. Mm-hmm. And they're also reducing the number of models that they're going to be pushing forward. They had, I believe, 27 smartphones in 2011 and 2012. They're going to cut that down to just a handful, and I'm hoping it means that it's going to be the higher end ones, because that's really what people are looking for Motorola. I mean, they make some nice gear.
That Razer Max phone, I recommend that to someone. When somebody asks me, okay, what phone should I get? I always say, what carrier do you have? And if they say Verizon, I say, you should check out the Razer Max. That's a nice little phone. So
Now, a nice little subtext to the story is, I know there are a lot of people who think this is what was going to happen all along. You know, Google just bought Motorola for the big patent war chest, and they're getting rid of the actual maker of phones. But this could actually be a good thing. I mean, if they can narrow it down to a couple of phones, if they can focus on design and actually taking what they've done well and pushing that in front of the people, then maybe they could become profitable again in, you know, 5 years.
Yeah. It's definitely curious to see how this happens and how this impacts the whole Google acquisition I'm still curious to see what that acquisition is going to yield.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I think the acid test for me will be next year at I.O. If it's a Motorola phone that they're giving out to the attendees, that tells you that, okay, Google wants to keep them around. If it's still a partner, then Google saying, look, we're not really invested in Motorola one way or another. It could die and it wouldn't really affect us.
Yeah. Do you think that they go backwards on kind of their promise where, when they say, well, we're not going to give preferential anything to Motorola?
I mean, people will say that. But yeah. I mean, it's not that they didn't give preferential treatment to Motorola, because obviously they are in letting them restructure. Mm-hmm. It's that they're saying, if you're not going to make good products, we're not going to prop you up.
Yeah.
And
yeah, fair enough.
I can't imagine laying out what they laid out to purchase it that it doesn't become a key part of their strategy. And I think mm-hmm. I think it's just too early to see. And I think honestly, I mean, it's always horrible when people lose their jobs, and I would hate to see 4,000 people, you know, not get employment anymore. But they're gonna. I mean, this is kind of typical. Google acquires it. They're gonna pare down. They're gonna focus on what they need to, and then they're gonna build back up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now. Right. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor for today's episode, Ford. Now, Leo and I actually spoke with one of Ford's lead technologists, this is Jim Bukowski, about his views on the future of technology and vehicles. And some of the topics that were kind of on the table for that discussion, things like categories of apps that are coming to the Sync platform, kind of cool location-based services, finding friends, financial service apps, all that type of stuff on the go. Lane departure warning and lane centering features using onboard cameras, using the cloud, which is kind of a big deal if you haven't heard these days, to seamlessly connect information services used in the home, vehicle, and office to make that a lot more convenient. Ford Social is one of the ways to develop and surface those ideas for the engineering team. Ford Social is basically a place where people are going to go to post ideas that they have to Ford. Now, you can go to social.ford.com and you can take a look at a lot of these ideas that are being posted to the site. There's a lot of really cool ideas being put up there. Wi-Fi music sharing between Fords, biodiesel hybrid, and that was actually submitted by a 15-year-old, automatic sunscreens, just a lot of different ways that technology can be kind of implemented into the Ford vehicles and kind of see where they go. Wind turbine under the hood to charge a lithium battery.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. As a tech geek, Ford wants to hear your ideas as well, and they invite you to join the conversation. So you can do that by going to social.ford.com. You can read all about it there, submit your ideas to Ford, and you can even like your favorite ideas. While you're there, be sure to grab a tech geek badge. Everybody's doing the badges these days, so is Ford here. You can get your own tech geek badge. You can also read a blog post that actually our Leo Laporte submitted about his discussion with Jim Bukowski. That's all. That's at social.ford.com, and that's where you go to check out all this stuff. We thank Ford so much for their support of All About Android and just the Twit Network in general. It's awesome having you guys with us. All right, let's get into the hardware section.
All right. Well, speaking of Motorola.
Oh, yes.
Speaking of, you know, ask and ye shall receive.
Speaking of hero devices.
The Motorola Photon Q 4G LTE is up for pre-order. It's going to be available on Sprint on August 19th for just $200. So if you are a Motorola fanboy and you're looking for a new phone, the new hotness is the Photon Q. Mm-hmm. It's a
the Photon Q 4G LTE.
Yeah, exactly. The names. that's just driving me crazy.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting phone because it looks like it's got a QWERTY keyboard, and it's got a 1.5 gigahertz dual core processor, ice cream sandwich, 8-megapixel rear facing camera. Looks to be like a nice little phone for $200. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
Also, we've got Barnes & Noble cutting the price on their Nook. So you can now pick up a Nook Reader for $150 and the Nook Color tablets for 180 and 200 for the 8 and 16 gigabyte versions. Now, one of the things that people are saying is they're clearing out inventory, getting ready for a new
one. Yeah, what's going on here? Are they trying to stay competitive, or are they getting ready for something new?
Exactly. And we all know why they're doing that. It's because of this thing.
So I think so. Yeah.
You've got the Nexus 7 breathing down their throat, and even though the Nook can still say, look, we're primarily a reader rather than a tablet, I think we can safely say that, yeah, they're feeling the heat.
Well, yeah, and I think that, I mean, the Nook is a nice tablet.
It is.
I mean, it's, you know, when they rolled out the Android ones that can run apps and things like that, I don't know how successful. I haven't seen any numbers on how their app sales have been and that sort of thing, but I believe it continues to be fairly successful for them. So you got to believe that they're clearing out inventory to roll out the holiday, kind of the next model, the next generation, and I'm curious to see what it looks like. I still think that it's Say what you will about the Barnes & Noble infrastructure and the layer, I still think it's the most uniquely designed bezel and the most uniquely designed piece of hardware really has an identity.
It absolutely has its own identity. Yeah. I think what's interesting here, and just listening to you talk, this kind of popped in my head, is the distinction between a reader that does tablet-like things and a fully-fledged tablet that's a 7-inch device. What's kind of cool in this case is that the Nexus 7 has come along and, you know, for whatever reasons, people look at it differently than they looked at the Nook than they looked at the Kindle Fire. Even though, you know, under the hood, you know, obviously there's a lot of really good hardware in the 7, but under the hood, they should be able to do most, if not all, of the same things.
But there was
this distinction of, no, well, that's actually the reason it's less expensive and the reason that it's low spec is because it's a reader that does some tablet-like things. Well, now they're forced to kind of meet Google at their game with the 7, and they're all, you know, going to have to come up with something that's reasonably comparable. And I don't think they can hide behind the, oh, well, it's just a reader that does a little bit more type excuse anymore. It has to be a tablet.
Well, at the very minimum, they need to open up the Nook to the Android store, the marketplace. Yeah. It has to be in there. If you're not doing that, it's DOA.
The closed system on there does potentially hurt them because Barnes & Noble just doesn't have the infrastructure or the massive ability to support something like this that Amazon, that Google has, or even Amazon. Mm-hmm. But again, going back to what we're saying about Android phones in the wild and people, you know, the average Joe who buys his books at Barnes & Noble and I always pick on the Midwest and I don't mean to, so I didn't. I held back. But in
kind of
some other town that I don't live in or have ever lived in, might be like, hey, I want a tablet. Barnes & Noble has treated me right this far, so I'm going to stick with it. So it's curious to see. I wonder how much of that momentum can keep them rolling with this problem.
Sure.
How did you do that? How did you make the apology become the insult?
Oh,
that was awesome.
I'm from New York. That's the answer.
That's just how it goes.
I'm sorry.
Now, Sony actually announced their plans, if you've been following the Gamescom conference, for PlayStation Mobile. It's something that they actually announced first at E3 this year. It's an initiative that they say will bring what they call bite-sized games for PlayStation-certified Android devices. It's kind of cool because those games, well, first of all, if they're purchased through their store, they're tied to your PlayStation Network IDs, and that's for like cross-device gaming things. But they've also announced that Asus and Wikipad are PlayStation-certified vendors. And I guess what I kind of like about this is just that there can be PlayStation-certified vendors now. It's kind of like what we've talked about on the show in the past about like being Nexus-certified or whatever. You know, it brings a... Not that that even exists, but in this case, it does for PlayStation, that a hardware manufacturer can kind of become certified for PlayStation access. Now, I guess that begs the question, like, does it really matter? Because has PlayStation on Android really been that big of a deal so far?
No, but could it be?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, so you've got on one hand, you've got Sony, who's got PlayStation and is this juggernaut PlayStation Network, and say what you will about security and whether your account is safe and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it is one of the two main kind of gaming platforms. But then on the other hand, you have Sony. They've got Android tablets. They've got Android phones. They're making a commitment to the Android platform. So at some point, those roads might converge. Mm-hmm. And you know, what we get out of it could be pretty darn interesting, and this could be the beginning of it.
Right. I think this is actually – you're going to see this from Microsoft very soon when we get the Surface tablets out, because – The manufacturers of game consoles are realizing, look, it's always been a losing game to make hardware. We've known that. It's always a loss leader. And we make it back on the games. Well, the hardware in a tablet like this is now approaching the level at which we can make competent gaming on these systems.
Yeah.
And if we can get them to license certain key technologies from us, you know, we can get a piece of a huge pie.
Yep.
I think, you know, you've got PlayStation doing this. You've already got Microsoft kind of doing it with Live, because Live is available on so many different devices. Mm-hmm. You're going to see it from Nintendo as soon as they have another, you know, revolution.
Iteration.
Every 15 years or so, Nintendo kind of eats itself and then gets reborn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what I think is interesting, though, is that in iOS and also a lot of Android, it's been trailblazing for independent game developers. So what you've got is you've got a lot of, you know, because it's a different platform, it's a little, you know, not easier, but just not as hard to break into. You know, not as many hoops to go through. But when you've got Sony, PlayStation, those big studios starting to develop things for PlayStation Android devices, when Microsoft Surface comes out and it inevitably links up to Xbox Live, and even though Xbox Live has a lot of indie developers on there, but I mean, you know, it's going to get, the competition's going to get even tougher. The games are going to get much better, and the independent developers are, you know, it's going to have to be even sharper in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully that breeds innovation. I mean, that's typically what happens.
Right.
And so, like, I think we'll get some good things out of it, but it could be a completely different landscape in about a year or two from now was when it comes to gaming, especially with tablets. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stuart Whitfield actually emailed us, aaa@twit.tv, with something that kind of ties into what we're talking about here, because one of my, you know, one of my frustrations with gaming on you know, these devices, touchscreen only devices primarily, can sometimes just be the control of it. You know, it's not always the most fun kind of format to really interact with versus having like a controller. Stuart says, I've only just caught up watching episode 71 tonight, a week behind. This is maybe a little old, but hopefully still of interest. In the arena, Jason reviewed the 6-axis controller app. I too have my 6-axis controller hooked up to my Galaxy S2. I use it to play all sorts of games, and he lists a bunch of them that you can actually do with that: Air Attack, HD, Pew Pew, Temple Run. Touch emulation is very powerful. Although this app works perfectly, I find it difficult to play using the controller, since holding the controller leaves no hands free to hold the phone. So I'm always balancing it on my lap. Obviously, this is a common problem, since I have come across this accessory. And I had heard about this, and I'd completely forgotten about it. It's called the Game Clip. And it actually allows you to clip your phone, in this case,
cool,
to your controller.
Oh, no.
Might not be the most beautiful thing in the world,
but like, that is functional.
If you're a geek, that is beautiful. Okay,
yeah,
I'm
right.
Sorry.
Like it does the trick. So if you've got your 6-axis app running on there and you're controlling the game, you don't have to really worry about where you put the phone now. Just clips right into your controller and it becomes a portable gaming system complete with controller.
Now, talk about Android in the wild. You find me a photo of somebody using that on the subway, and I will buy you a cookie.
Even better, you get me a video of someone using that and then running into traffic.
Right.
And then you will get a cookie.
Like main song pop.
That's right.
There you go. Be careful with your game.
Yeah, that's a dangerous cookie right there. So that is The Game Clip, spelled with a K, .com. You can check it out if you want to pick up one of those.
It's kind of cool.
That's super cool. I mean, that's clever. And I'll give him credit, even, you know, what little stumbling in the world of marketing that I've done in my career. Those are some good taglines. It's like, you know, simple, just gaming, you know, secure. Because I'd worry about the phone falling out and things like that. It looks like they got it. This is smart.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It's funny.
So there you go. Check that out. Thank you, Stuart, for sending that in. All right, let's get to our apps.
So tomorrow, Adobe will be disabling new installs of Flash on Android. So I guess Flash dies officially.
Do we have some sort of graphic for like death or a graveyard, or you know, like the, you know, the horn, you know, the yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big deal.
Now see, they said they were going to do this.
There's a backstory to this that a lot of people haven't heard, and that is Adobe was actually on the Now I'm just tearing up.
What is that?
It's okay.
I'm sorry,
I don't
Flash.
Know, but it's piano.
I failed you. You want to live, man. Live. Clear. See the light. No, but I mean, Adobe was ready to kill Flash.
That's true.
They really were. Actually, a couple of years ago, because they realized it's kind of buggy, and it's always going to be resource hoggish. But then when Apple came out with that, well, I'm sorry, when Steve Jobs came out with Flash Must Die, they were caught in a quandary because they couldn't seem as if they were bending to Jobs.
Right.
So they actually extended support for Flash years beyond what it would have died in its natural death. Mm. So I think this is finally Adobe saying, okay, we want to get rid of this. We would like you to move on to our next generation platform. We're all go. Please forget the Flash experience and forget that we created it.
Yeah. I'm really curious about what this is going to mean for Air and other apps that have been developed utilizing Air on Android, because I know that there is a, albeit small, but a decent sector of developers who built on the Air platform and then leverage it out to Android. So are they going to be left in the cold? You know, I mean, it's new installs. So that's the important thing to know.
Yeah.
So if you have, it's not like Flash is all of a sudden going to die on your phone and not work. But.
And I'm pretty positive that even once they're not offering it through the Play Store, I have to imagine if it isn't already, it's going to be pretty easy to find that APK and install it.
You're going to find a way to sideload
it yourself. It is just kind of, it's an interesting chicken and egg
in reverse scenario, because it's kind of like, you do you get rid of it now and then hope that, you know, all these sites that still depend on it kind of change their ways, or do you wait? And I don't know. It's hard to say, because so many sites still do, for better or for worse, they still, you know, rely.
Less and less, though, every day. I mean,
of course.
As you're browsing out there with the rise of HTML, you know how bullish on HTML5 I've been, and the rise of HTML5 has really kind of helped to shepherd out Flash out of our development kind of collective spirit, which is, I just, you know, applaud, because Flash has been a thorn in my side since like the mid-2000s. So I'm not shedding a tear over losing Flash.
I've made that crossover. I used to be in the, Flash sucks, but it's on all those sites I need to visit.
Right.
It's become so buggy recently. It's crashing so often that I finally shifted over to, I'll be good to see, it'll be great to see it die.
You know what's really interesting, though, which is completely, I mean, which cracks me up and totally non-sequitur, not related to this, but Gmail uses Flash in ways you don't even detect. The attach file, file attachment, at least on Chrome, on the Mac, that's Flash. Because Flash will crash and I can still write an email, but I can't attach a file.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, really fascinating.
There will be a lot of sites.
Exactly.
Be like
little
that.
Things
Tiny
like
little
that,
Flash
yeah.
hooks
exactly.
that no one knew about until suddenly you get weird functionality problems.
But, I mean, it's going to get to a point where it's just restaurant websites that have Flash.
Right. And those pesky restaurant websites, why don't they step into
HTML5 future? Give me an open table form, give me a PDF menu, and I am done. Like, I don't need to see your restaurant and your music.
And I guess that's why I kind of lamented a little bit. I understand exactly what you're talking about, and, you know, I'm fine to see, you know, everybody kind of moving to whatever the next thing is.
Right.
But if you can still, why not? You know what I mean? But, you know, I'm sure Adobe, from their perspective, they don't want to continue to put something out that they no longer support.
Yep.
Because then that's going to be a black eye for them when they don't support it, when it's not working for a number of people. So I understand both sides. There's enough reason to keep it around.
The version updating to make sure it works with every OS as fast as we're updating the OSs these days. Yeah.
I mean, having said that, though, since I've been on Jelly Bean, you know, I only use Chrome as my browser, and it doesn't have Flash, and I really don't find myself needing Flash. There might be every once in a while where I go to a site and it doesn't load the way I expect it to, but it's not a deal breaker.
I had that for about the first week using the Nexus 7 with Jelly Bean, and then it was like, oh yeah, it doesn't have Flash. Okay, well, there's another way to do it.
Something happened where my Nexus 7, where I went to install Flash, and I was like, I can't install Flash on here, and I can't remember what the application was. But there was an application where I'm like, I needed Flash on the Nexus 7. I was disappointed I couldn't get it. And I can't.
There you go.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. Oh, there you go. But it's hardly an argument to keep supporting Flash.
Right. And there are ways to still pull up Flash. So don't worry about it. You can still get it if you want. Adobe's just not going to be giving it to you directly. So Jelly Bean introduced app encryption. We remember this from when we heard all about Jelly Bean for the first time. That was to protect paid apps and developers from getting ripped off from piracy, basically. Cue the sad trombone, although I'm pretty sure that there is no sad trombone. So it's okay, Chad, if you don't have it. As that DRM actually makes many developers' apps unusable with... Thank you,
Chad.
With how it stores information critical to their apps, they disappear from the device once it's rebooted. Essentially, these paid apps were being installed into an encrypted folder that was wiped with a reboot. And, you know, that's in an effort to protect the apps. Instead, it's actually making those paid apps not work. Google has since disabled the security feature, so they're kind of taking a look at it to kind of rejigger it a little bit. Yet another case of DRM wreaking havoc on those that abide by the rules, which is kind of a bummer. Although, ultimately, yes, that does suck. I'm okay with the fact that you know, this is there. I know that a lot of developers were really happy to see that there was some sort of encryption kind of tied into Jelly Bean to protect their apps. So
just got to get it right.
They'll get it right.
I mean, if anything, this is just lights a fire under their butts to get it right. Yeah. You know, that's so. But so in the hey, wow, this is cool file, Google has updated the Android app for Google Translate to version 2.5, and it includes some very cool new functionality, the ability to translate text from images.
Yeah. We were talking about Word Lens.
Right?
This is kind of a free way to do part of that.
Quite interesting. So now if you are in, oh, I don't know, France, and you see a street sign, you can just take a picture of the street sign, and it will translate the street sign itself and tell you what it means.
So there's...
You're going to try to translate the desk.
I'm just trying to show it, right? I got to, like, prop this
right,
up.
No, so we're going to translate office
okay,
screen.
Okay, well, this isn't working. There so let me just take it. I'll take the picture of the sign. Okay, now you can show it, Chad. Okay, so there's the sign right there. So basically, you take a picture of the sign, right? And the bottom part of it is in Spanish. Let's see, Spanish to English. So then I highlight the part I want to translate, and it says, permit parking only. Pretty cool.
That is so cool.
It does it like immediately. Cool.
And what's even cooler is you can change what language you want to translate it to.
Yes.
So let's change it to Arabic, and it'll give it to us in Arabic.
Oh, yeah, I can totally read that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
See, that's exactly what I meant to say.
Yeah, we can look at it in, maybe I want to know what it is in Dutch.
What does it look like in, ah.
There you go. Toll latent parking only.
This is the killer app for Google Glasses.
If you built this
into Google Glasses, oh my goodness.
That's hypothetically if Google Glasses
work. That's if it actually exists.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But what's even, and they couldn't just stop there. They couldn't just stop with the image translation, but they also added instant translation results while typing to the app. So when you select your dialect and start typing, what's going to happen, it's instantly translating what you want to translate, which is the move towards Google Instant results continues to fascinate me. How they can actually think ahead of you. And
I want to see how that works, though, because some languages, the context is very specific. I mean, depending on words that are at the beginning of the sentence, it will change words at the end and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. They also added support for multiple characters at once for Japanese handwriting, which is interesting as well, which I wouldn't know how to demo in the first place.
Oh, yeah. But, Chad, actually, you can show this, and it shows it as I go here. Well, maybe, if it'll be big enough for you here. But, hello and welcome to...
Ooh. That's so
that's
cool.
Cool. Underground...
Lair.
Oh my goodness.
You're underground lair or lair?
Lair. Dang it. Whatever.
So
lair. There we go.
That's cool. You see, this is a category of Google doing cool stuff.
Hola y bienvenidos a mi guarida subterránea. Subterránea.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know how to say that. There we go.
So stay away from Jason's underground lair.
Right.
If you feel the need to translate things and you want to translate signs and images and things like that, you can get it now. Google Translate is version 2.5 is available in the Google Play Store. So go download it now. I know some folks in the chat room were saying, how can I get this? Just go download it. It's free. It. Google wants you to have it. They want you to have the information. Take it.
Take their stuff.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
All right. So on to another email. This one's a little little wordy, so we're going to dive right into it.
Yeah.
It's all good.
And I just want I could summarize it. But.
No, it's okay. So Rami Katan writes in and says, greetings, AAA team. I'm a listener of your show since episode one, and I love it. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Without you, we are nothing. Rami says, I'm an Android user since about a year and a half now, and I love my Android experience, but there was always a missing feature that I wanted. Get notifications when some applications get updated. For these reasons. There's an app that I want to purchase, but the price is a bit high. I want to wait until the app is on sale. For many reasons, it happens quite frequently on Android apps, then buy it. I like the game, but I finished all the levels, and the developer promised to add some extra levels. I want to free up some space on my device till the game gets an update, then download it when the new levels are released. That's a fair reason.
Absolutely.
With Google Play auto update feature enabled, I miss most app updates. The Play Market will update them silently, and I discover it was updated days later.
That's a good one right
there,
too.
That's a very good one. Yeah.
That's why I don't turn on auto update, actually.
Yeah. So Rami said, I looked around but found no app or service that can send me notifications when an app gets updated. So being a software developer, I developed a service myself and provided it to everybody on the web, and I called it AppFeed. Everybody can find Rami's project at appfeed.net. Very cool. I want something, so I'm going to go build it.
It's not there, so I'm going to build it. That's how great things are created, right?
That's
somebody
fantastic.
Has a great idea. It's like, why can't I find this? And turns out it's a great idea.
Yeah, so it's really cool. You can sign into it via Twitter or Google. You find the apps that you want to track, and then follow the feed in any RSS feed reader of your choice, and then you get notifications when apps are updated. So he's got great instructions there on how to use it. I mean, bravo. Good job.
Bravo.
I love seeing empowered All About Android members. You want something, go build it. I guess really the next challenge for Rami is to make this into an Android app.
Right? Yeah, like the one thing that I see looking at this is it's cool what it does. The adding apps to track is a little cumbersome in the sense that you have to go to the Play Store on a browser, copy the URL into the thing, mm-hmm. and then that actually in turn kind of creates the RSS feed
right.
that's then loaded into your reader. So that could be, if you have a lot of apps that you're tracking, that could take a while to set up initially. But making that into an app of some sort or having some sort of way to read your list and automatically import those things. But this is a great start, and I thought it was kind of a cool solution to a problem that, I mean, I've had before, but I've just never
decided to code a program to fix it.
Exactly.
I mean, I just love that. Like, I have a problem. I'm going to go out there and solve it. And so, you know, Rami, I don't know what kind of developer you are, but, you know, if you want to take our challenge, you know, learn how to make turns to it. Would be great to have this as an Android app and get the notifications on your phone, not have to rely on the RSS feed. But maybe you don't know how to develop for an Android app. So maybe another All About Android community mm-hmm. member might want to raise their hand and say, I'll help you build that. So, you know, we'll let you guys find each other on the internet. Right. Be amazed.
It'll be magical. Yeah. We've actually talked about something similar to this in the past because Eileen complained episodes and episodes ago about not knowing what the changelog is for every app. And I know that we found some sort of app that catalogs those change logs, but it doesn't give you as much control over it as this. Like, one thing that this does that I don't think that one did mm-hmm. is this would allow you to track apps that you don't have installed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's,
you know, and that's kind of a big one.
And that's the real key from his email that he mentioned was that, you know, hey, here's an app that I'm keeping an eye on, mm-hmm. but I want to, I think a price update is really interesting because, you know, you see an app
that does happen.
Yeah, you see an app for sale for $3.99 and then it goes on sale for free or something like that. So I think that's really compelling. Mm-hmm. I think the ability to I finished a game, but I want more. I would like to go back to that game, but I don't want to keep the game on my phone. That idea, the expanding levels. I mean, it is a real need, and honestly, I'm surprised that there's not an Android developer who has developed an Android app that does this yet. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe there's somebody in the audience who will take it to task and do it. But that's a need I didn't even think about. Now that I think mm-hmm. about it, that's something I would totally use.
Yep.
So, yeah.
You got it. Well, thanks for sending that in, Rami. That's really cool. And it is appfeed.net. There we go. All right. Let's dive into an Android arena. How about that?
Two enter. One lives. Android arena. Yeah.
So I've got to say, before my ritual, as we prepare for All About Android, when I'm not stuck in traffic, my ritual is I review the stories we're going to talk about, and I always, the last thing I like to do is, let's just go check in on last week's arena, just to see if I'm prepared.
Oh, boy.
And I got to admit, this week, I was shocked.
Yeah?
I thought for sure that I was rooting for, admittedly, I was rooting for Eileen's app,
mm-hmm.
But I thought that that Twitter app, Slices, that we saw from our guest last week would edge mm-hmm. it out.
Jessica Dolcourt.
Jessica, that's a great app. I've been playing with it on my tablet. I went to look at the results. The man.
Kaboom. Well, you know,
I am shocked.
Got a lot of people on Twitter and, you know, that voted on the poll that you can comment on the pages at Go Poll Go. So that's always kind of cool. Saying, like, this is a really, like, hard arena. All the apps were pretty.
Except mine was a lemon.
Get
it? Because it was a lemon.
I guess so. I mean, so.
It's like a 56 votes.
Yeah, that. See? Yeah. See, that's good. Yeah. Six Axis controller won with 42% of the votes. Slices, Jessica's Twitter app at 30%, second place. Song Pop, third place, 18%. And Lemon Wallet came in fourth at 10%. But
I guess
there are a lot of good apps.
I guess I underestimated the number of people. I always underestimate the number of people who are gaming on their phones or on their tablets, mainly because I'm not a gamer. I think that's a precedent that we've already set.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally underestimated the number of people that would want to attach a six-axis controller to their phone to use it. So I'm impressed.
Totally. I was geeking out over it. I mean, I was looking at it going, I'd use that right now. Please, hand it over.
Now add that clip and then you're
that's
all set.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly. Just, yeah. Well, it's also kind of cool to be able to take something you have lying around that maybe you're not using very much,
yep.
And suddenly it you know, brings new use to something. That
repurposing tech,
yeah.
Recycling.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. That's very, very cool. And I want to be more of a gamer. It's like I used to be such a gamer. It's like I used to be a big PC gamer.
No, me too.
And all that stuff. Yep. It's just as you get older, and
it's all time.
Yeah.
Exactly. I just can't find much time for gaming these days. Yeah. As much as I try, it never seems to stick around for me.
Yeah.
So then, Ron, that means that you are up first.
I am up first, and this week on the arena, I was actually as I was flying back to San Francisco this weekend, I was thinking about it. I tend to travel a lot. I know I talk about it a lot. I like to fly. I believe there are a lot of folks out there also enjoy travel, whether it's for vacation or for business or for whatever. I know there are a lot of plane nerds and plane hobbyists. I've worked with a couple in the past and things like that. I was delighted to discover that there is a app that has taken the data and functionality of an application that I actually use on the web and has brought it to the phone. And it's from the folks at TripAdvisor, which are a well-known, established kind of travel resource website online. And the app is called SeatGuru. So now I'm going to break it down. I'm going to break down what this app does and what the application actually does and then show it to you because it's got way more than what I just tell it. But basically, if you fly a lot and if you're on long-distance flights, if you're ever flying to, I don't know, San Francisco to London or New York to Sydney or to Japan or anything like that, where you sit is the make or break between driving you nuts for 14 hours mm-hmm. or having a pleasant voyage. Absolutely. And what I discovered when I discovered SeatGuru is that thankfully the internet has collected all the information out there that we ever want, and I can now look up by airline, by flight, by plane, all these different dimensions and find out what is the best seat on that flight and make sure I book that seat. Mm-hmm. And I've used it a lot in the past. And now that it's on my phone, it is great because I've actually used it. I've had to change a flight in the airport. I'm like, all right, well, let me see what seat I'm going to get. I actually was flying back from Florida in July back to San Francisco, and they wanted to change my seat. And I said, hold on a second. I checked. I was like, okay, yeah, that's cool. So let me show you the app and let me show you what it does. So if we dive right in here, you can see, and I'm sorry, my phone's all smudgy. You can see that once you load SeatGuru, you've got kind of three options that you can do. You can get seat map advice, shop for flights, or get a flight status. So I'm going to go to the seat map advice. That's our kind of main thing. And basically what you can do is you can search by flight number. So if you know that, okay, listen, I've got to go to New York and I'm going on JetBlue flight number 185. I want to make, I want to check all the seats on that plane. You can search that way. Or you can search by route. So, okay, I'm going, I'm going to fly American Airlines. I'm going to go from, New York to LA. What are the planes that are running that way? Or you can search by airline, which is really cool because if you are a plane nerd, like some folks who are, some airlines have different model planes. Some, like the JetBlue is all Airbuses and that sort of thing. So you can scroll and you can find your preferred airline. I'm going to go to American Airlines because I know they have a large fleet. And what's fascinating, you may not notice this when you book, but primarily also when you book, I don't know so much about the aggregators like Expedia and things like that, but when you book on a lot of the airlines' direct websites, they will tell you the model plane you're flying on. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if you're going from San Francisco to London, really long flight, and it's going to tell you that it's on a Boeing 737-800-738, you can click that. Or tap it. Sorry, said click. You can tap it, and it will load a map of the plane, and it will easily color code to you where the good and the bad seats are. Okay, so if there's no color code, that's just an average seat. I can tap on that, and it will tell me this whole block of seats is going to say seats 17 through 19 are standard economy seats. Nothing big there. Okay, so I know what I'm getting when I sit here, but I'm like, oh well, these are red. Why is this red? So I'm going to click on this one here. Well, not the yellow one, the red one. There you go. And it's going to tell me that seat 14F has extra leg room but no recline. The window side armrest is attached to the wall, which may be uncomfortable. The tray table is in the armrest, making it immovable. It can get very cold by the exit during the flight.
Oh, that's the worst part.
I've sat in this seat horrible. On a flight to London. Mm-hmm. It's the worst seat on the plane. Yeah. It's miserable. Mm-hmm. So then, all right, well, what are these green ones? It's going to tell me these. So these seats in row 15 have extra leg room. The tray tables are in the armrest, making the armrest immovable and reducing the already tight seat width. So they're better seats, but they're a little dangerous because you don't have much width. So it allows you to make more educated decisions about where you're actually going to sit on the dang flight, which is kind of invaluable. But if that's all the app did, it would be a little useless. Not useless, but a little silly. But so luckily the SeatGuru folks, they also put in their flight search tools as well as flight status tools. So if you're an active flyer, this app then becomes your go-to app to check your flight status or to even search for flights to go from there. So it's a little extra functionality. It's free. It's informative. And quite honestly, I'll get lost for about a half an hour just browsing plane layouts and finding good seats. Mm-hmm. And because it also becomes a thing because a lot of, as planes are getting more and more technical, technologically advanced, you find out what specific flights have Wi-Fi on board,
yep.
which ones have AC outlets on board, where they are. Like, for example, I was on a flight once, and I was on an American flight, and American has AC outlets, but like every five rows, at least on this plane.
And you want to know which row
exactly,
it is.
Exactly, so yeah. So it takes the guesswork out of your booking your flight, which is, you know, which honestly can be the difference maker between starting out a good trip or having a miserable time. So.
Right. So, I mean, I fly for a living. I'm in the plane more than I'm not. And, I mean, this is something that I just downloaded it. So
there you go.
I'm voting for you.
Oh, thank you.
Seat Guru is awesome. Yeah. Like, on the web, I mean, I'm incredibly tall, I need it.
That was
like,
the use case I totally forgot. If you're incredibly tall, you want to know how much leg room you have.
Yes.
If you're, you know, like, depending on your weight and all this sort of stuff. There are all these different factors. Everybody has different requirements when they fly. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's always good to know how close it is to the bathroom, you know, like right. all those sort of things. I have had some wonderful flights, some wonderful transcontinental flights, thanks to Seat Guru, because I got the good seat. So
cool. Yep. Seat Guru, the app.
It's
get
free.
It. I'm definitely going to get that. Although I wish I flew more to put it to use more, but.
Yeah, I'm starting to think I have a problem.
Indispensable.
I'm starting to think that it's a problem.
The first step is to admit it.
Yeah, I know.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
I know. Yeah. So, anyway.
All right, cool. Father Robert, you are up next. What you got?
Yeah, so this is actually an extension off of a story that was covered by Twit, I believe, a week ago, or maybe even 2 weeks ago. It was Matt Honan. And what happened was he had his accounts linked on his iPad, his iPhone, and his MacBook Air. And deletion of one basically wiped them all out. I mean, he was hacked, but it could be that if you accidentally delete a file on one of your devices, that sync will be propagated to everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what I've been trying to tell a lot of my users has been synchronization is not backup. Synchronization is for utility. It's for ease of use, but you still need a backup. And so, I mean, my app is a sacrificial lamb. It's not going to win. I don't want it to win. What I want it to do is I want people to actually download it and use it. It's called a click-free automatic backup. Now, anyone who has used one of their hard drives before knows click-free. They're this company that specializes in these idiot-proof backup devices. You basically plug them in, it runs the software, and it goes. It's the same idea with here. We've got an application that gives you the ability to back up pretty much any documents you may have, any programs you might have running in your tablet. So you can choose your photos, your music, your videos, documents, applications, et cetera, et cetera. You get to choose the parts of the tablet that you think need to be backed up, and then you get to choose where you're going to back it up. Now, here's the cool part. I can back it up to Dropbox, Skybox, Box, basically anywhere in the cloud.
Google Drive,
or this device. I can actually tell it to use the SD card that I have built into this, so I can pull the SD card out and have a complete backup of everything, not just the sync files, but my application. So if I ever need to reset this to factory, I pop the SD card back in, I reload the click-free app, one click, and boom, it goes back to the way it was. Now, what I really like about this device, about this app, is that it's smart enough to understand when you're trying to do a backup and, you know, when you're just trying to get files on and off of your device. So it will help you to trim and par your backup file list. It will help you to parse your actual backup file. It's actually quite intelligent. Now, backing up isn't sexy. It's not fun. But if as
pretty
you
important.
Have it, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a tablet. We'll call it a tablet failure. What really happened was I left a tablet on top of a car.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's a failure on some level.
It was fail. But because I had backed it up, I actually took the SD card out of the tablet, plugged it into the replacement tablet, and boom, everything was back.
Can we back up and talk about the tablet on the car? What? So did you drive away? Did it go flying?
I actually didn't drive away. I left it on top of the car, and someone else drove away.
Okay. Oh, were you in the car?
I was not in the car.
So you watched it happen?
As I heard the engine revving, I turned around, and it was...
No! Oh, no! I totally had one of those. Part of my this is a story, but we're running okay on time.
Yeah, we're doing all right.
So in July, I was actually at Disney World with my family, and got off of Space Mountain, and I was wearing shorts, and I had my phone, and the phone slid right out, and I got off the ride, And I did my usual, like, okay, go to the phone to go tweet about the fact that I just went in Space Mountain. And the phone wasn't there. And I watched the car, the ride thing going away. And I went, no! And so I quickly shouted to the girl. And I said, my phone's in there. And so she called and called ahead to the next spot. And they grabbed it before people got on the ride. And it was this close to falling out on Space Mountain. So, anyway. But, yeah, so I share your pain.
Exactly.
Although I recovered it. But, wow, that's – oh, that's...
I once left my sunglasses on top of my car.
Oh, and that's a total – yeah, that's not nearly as disastrous. But
I got to say, though, for not wanting – you know, saying you don't want this app to win or something, that's a pretty handy app.
It's a very handy app. Yeah, and that's why, you know, I say, you know, because I like the app. I want people to use the app. But I don't care if it wins as long as people download it.
Yeah.
That's what the arena is all about.
That's the true meaning of the arena, Jason. This is a great...
It's not about winning. It's about bringing cool apps to the
table. Exactly. Yeah, turn the other screen. You know what I'm saying?
That's awesome. So that's click-free automatic backup, and it's free.
It's free.
Love it. Awesome. Cool. All right. Very useful apps. Now mine is not useful at all. No, not true. Mine is useful, but I feel like this is one of those apps that a certain, you know, few people are going to be like, yes, I totally need that. And everybody else is going to be like, oh, yeah, that's okay. It's called Insta Wi-Fi. And basically what it does is it works with both NFC or you can also use QR code. And it's an app that when you install it, it allows you to do a few things. So I'll go ahead and show you right now. I'll launch Insta Wi-Fi here. So this is Insta Wi-Fi. It's in NFC mode right now. I have this little NFC tag. There we go. Can see it.
Ooh, cool.
I'll go ahead and put it back there. And what you can see on the screen is, it's already connected. Okay. What you can see is an SSID for, it totally zapped what was on the NFC tag. We'll remove that for a second. It has the SSID for all of the different Wi-Fi access points I have in my phone. What I can do is I can write to this NFC tag the Wi-Fi credentials. And the cool thing about this is that the reason I thought this would be kind of useful is, you know, I have people come over to my house and they automatically ask you, like, what's your Wi-Fi access point? What's your password? And I had to, you know, tell them it's a long password and I have to make sure that they do it right or whatever. So in this case, what I can do is I can write it to an NFC tag. And the downside is you have to have Insta Wi-Fi installed in order to read it, right? But if you don't have Insta Wi-Fi installed and you put it up with NFC, it launches the Play Store and
you can download it. Yeah.
So it brings you right there. But so that's one way that you can do it. I can put this up here. I can write to tag. I'll show you.
You're writing the information to that tag.
I just wrote Twit Office.
That's so cool.
ID and password to the tag, right? And I can show you how that works then. So let's go out here. Make sure that my Wi-Fi is off. I'm going to go to my mobile networks here. And let's see here. So that was for Office, right? I have to turn it on in order to forget Office here. Let's see here. So Office, I'm going to go ahead and forget that. Forget the network. So it's no longer in my list. I'll turn it off. And then now, there we go. So now if I put this up here, scanning, associating, connected. And it'll turn on Wi-Fi, and I'm now connected to that Wi-Fi access point.
That is super cool.
That is very cool.
That is super cool.
You can just program it into a little NFC tag. I could also beam it to you.
Okay.
So, you know, there's that as well with NFC. And the other cool thing, of course, is that if I launch it here and the person that's over doesn't have NFC, all you have to do is go into QR mode.
Cool.
It gives you the QR code for the Wi-Fi. So as long as they have some sort of a scanning app, all they have to do is scan that, and that's all they need. They don't actually need Insta Wi-Fi installed on their phone. They just have to have a scanner that is capable of doing QR codes.
I'm totally geeking out over that. Yeah. That's
so it's just a way to make it it's like the stupidest thing to be like, I want to make it easy for people that visit my house to get on my Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't have to be limited to that. But it's a very kind of specific use case app. It's called Insta Wi-Fi. And I will say, I also came across a post by the developer of this on his site, and I'll include it in our show notes at twit.tv/AAA72 for the episode number. And he did, and developers in particular might find this interesting, he did a post hoc, what he calls a post hoc analysis of how he launched Insta Wi-Fi. It was his first app that he's ever developed for Android. And he just kind of created a really nice detailed article about what worked and how he launched the app and what, you know, wasn't so successful. He found that not many people, you know, got
to his app through his website, but having a YouTube video that's less than 3 minutes and associating that with your Play Store, it's just a really kind of a good kind of interesting insight into one developer's kind of launch of their app, and maybe other developers can read through it and kind of learn a few things from it.
That's cool from a resource standpoint.
Yeah.
But that app, like that just thinking about that concept makes me wonder, like, that's the kind of thing Google should roll into the operating system.
Isn't it interesting?
Right?
Because we were kind of talking about that a little bit earlier. I think Justin Robert Young is here for NSFW later on tonight, and that's exactly what he asked. He's like, why isn't this kind of just part of it to begin with?
And then why isn't it already part of it? Why don't I have NFC in my laptop? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because how great would it be to just you know, hover your laptop close to something and be able to, you know, getting nods in the audience. Thank you, sir. And be able to connect to the Wi-Fi. I mean, like that, you know, like.
The hooks are there, though, because if you take the Nexus 7 and you hover it over the queue, it will become the remote control.
Right,
so the hooks are built in there. It's just Google has to let developers use them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Plus the queue doesn't do anything other than that. So.
Yeah. Well,
but that, Jason, that's a very small but formidable app. I'm impressed.
Totally.
It is.
And
totally.
I want to get one of these NFC tags. Where do you get those?
Well, this is a Samsung Tactile. It's Samsung's kind of proprietary. Well, it's not even proprietary because it's just NFC. It's just an NFC tag. I just overrode it with the Insta Wi-Fi.
Right, I kind of want
to. But we had it hanging out around Nicole Lee. I asked around the office if anyone had one so I could demonstrate this, but
I kind of want to get a bunch of those, and I just want to start writing NFC tags and putting them all over.
Well, okay, it's interesting. Actually, so check this out. The developer has said it's a free app. He has a donate button in the app. If you donate, he will send you NFC tags.
Ooh, cool.
Okay.
Even better. Wow.
So check it out. I don't know if that's a short-term thing. Yeah. But definitely check it out. You can donate, I think, $2 or $4 or whatever. And he has like a bunch of NFC tags. And I don't know exactly how many he's giving. But, you know, he'll give you a couple and you can program them. And then when people visit, they can hop on your Wi-Fi.
And also, Jonathan SCE in the chat room let us know about tagstand.com, which appears to be an NFC card provider, NFC tag provider.
Oh, okay.
So for $15, you can get a NFC hobbyist starter kit that gets you 15 stickers. So a buck a sticker, not
too bad. That's not too
bad. So thank you for that chat room, Jonathan. Yeah. Awesome. Very cool.
Radical. All right. So that is Insta Wi-Fi. We also have Ron's Seat Guru app, free. And then, Father Robert, you had Click Free Automatic Backup. Three very useful apps this week around.
All about Android.
I love it when the arena kind of falls into this unplanned kind of theme.
So next week is all fart apps. Basically.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
Basically, yes. No, next week are all the apps that are like, I'm so rich, that are like $200. So we each have to buy one and review those.
Okay. That's the plan. Okay.
All right. Well, you can vote on your favorite app this week by going to bit.ly/AAApoll72. bit.ly/AAApoll72. Let us know which is your favorite app. Is it Seat Guru, Click Free Automatic Backup, or Insta Wi-Fi?
Insta Wi-Fi is running away with it. The early lead.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm telling you, man, that's a functional app.
It's still a pretty close race there, though.
Cool.
Between Click Free Automatic Backup and Insta Wi-Fi right now.
Yeah.
I could see this going any way. And Seat Guru is just such a useful.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, Seat Guru, you have to be a traveler. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Right.
I mean, you know, if
or a plain nut.
A plain nut. Yeah, exactly.
Actually, one of the things about Seat Guru that I really liked is there are some seats that you think would be good that are not. Like the ones right next to exit rows, you think you get more leg room.
They don't. The fact that the row in front of it behind it doesn't recline.
Right.
That
it knows what the entertainment systems are, and so it's blocking off your feet.
What I thought was really interesting, I forgot which plane model it was, but earlier when I was going through and I was prepping my demo, I found a plane where there was one random seat that was red, and like it was kind of like, and it was nowhere near anything. I was like, what is this? And then every seat on this plane reclines. The seat normally slides forward as it reclines. So instead it goes like this, right?
Oh,
right. So the seat kind of reclines forward. Right. This one seat in this one row only reclines back. And so therefore, if you're in it, the person in front of you is going to get a
in
little lower. Yeah. And so I was like, oh wow, I will never sit in that seat ever.
Yeah.
And like, it's just one seat. And so it's just fascinating. Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yeah. And it's from what I understand, it's all, not all, but majority crowdsourced by other plane nuts who note what flight they're on, what plane they're on. And this is the experience I had. And the, you know, and so it's when it gets down to the individual individual flight route and plane number, that's when it's fascinating. Yeah. When you know the exact plane, there's a problem with that seat.
I always want to make sure that the seat in front of me doesn't recline. Because if it does, I'm a dead man on a plane.
I always break the seat in front of me. It's really easy. Just jam something in the gear. It's done.
There was another couple seats where it identified when there was partial windows or no windows. So it depended, you know, because sometimes some planes, the way it goes. It's just, that's fascinating. It's cool. Yeah. So I know. I'm a dork. But
we're all dorks here. We're united in our dorkitude.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. bit.ly/AAApoll72. Go vote. And that is it for this week. We kind of cruised through this episode.
We really did.
Somehow. Last week's was a little bit long, so we're making up for that, I guess, right now.
What has changed about this episode and last episode? I mean,
I think there's... wait a minute. I think the magnet, that stand is affecting us.
Yeah, I think the magnet. Yeah, that's what it is.
That's got to be what it is.
The magnet. Father Robert, it's awesome having you on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Stoked to have you on and that you agreed to do this and jump into the fire with us.
it's warm.
Yes. Go ahead and plug anything that you'd like to plug.
The thing I want to plug is TWiET, This Week in Enterprise Tech. I mean, if you're a geek, you don't have to be an enterprise geek, but if you're a geek and you like knowing how the world is connected, we film every Monday at 12 noon PDT. And if you come, you can jump into the chat room, and I regularly take questions and integrate those into the content. I believe this coming Monday, we're going to be talking a little bit about what it's like to travel in a hostile country with sensitive data. So it's a little bit of spyish espionage. It'll be fun. Cool. Stop by, say hi, scream out in the chat room, and keep TWiET.
Excellent. I'll have to remember to get some Spy Hunter music for that segment. I'll see if I can work on that. Ron, go ahead and plug.
Yes, you can go to about.me/RonXO and you can find all links to me on Twitter and Google+ and Facebook and all that fun stuff. And check out graphically.com and ifanboy.com where I spend my days.
Yay, yes.
Woot.
You do that. You can find me. I am at Jason Howell on Twitter, about.me/Jason Howell, and everywhere else is Raygun01. Yeah, it doesn't make much sense, but that's the way it is. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Leave us a voicemail. You can reach us at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email or give us a video mail with a link to that to the video mail in an email to AAA@twit.tv. You can find our show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. You can always find our show notes at twit.tv/AAA. The full show notes right as the episode is posted. Look for that tonight. Past episodes are also available on our site. You can also find those on iTunes, YouTube, all over the place. Finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Open Gangnam Style. Hey, sexy lady.
This is high quality entertainment, folks.
And it's all over. I'm not gonna see anything more. There's nothing more.
Ah! I was wrong! I was so wrong! This week on Dancing with Ozzy.